7th Avenue Pizza, the official pizza of the Soda Pod.
The Soda Pod, the official beer and hockey podcast of 7th Avenue Pizza.
Segment number two here on MNCAA. It is our NCHC. I shouldn't say crew because it's our board member. It's Max Veach, my friend. Thanks for coming in. Recording a little bit later than we normally do on a Monday. Had shall we say some scheduling conflicts earlier this afternoon, but meanwhile we're back at it. So welcome back, my friend. Good to see you.
Great to see you too. If you're calling me the chairman of the board. Only because there is no other board members, or there are no other board members. Yeah, I mean, I'll take it. If that's the only way I'm going to get on one of those chairs or to be a chair, then it is what it is. And I'm okay with that. This is where I belong.
Between you and me, Max, if Noah's here, you still win. So
good to know.
So no, it's not just because you're the only person here. But at the end of the day, you know, here we are. We're going to talk a larger NCHC type picture, but we do have to start with, well, how about this? Both our teams got schlacked this weekend. Say both, because at the end of the day, you actually, at least on one,
you got
of your,
2 points.
You got some points. It's more than what St. Cloud could say. So let's start there. Let's recap the UMD series and dive into maybe some of the other matchups and kind of go from there.
Yeah. Friday, I guess, was the good day, if we want to put it that way. They being UMD, finds a way to get 2 points. It's as I kind of predicted. I actually only thought they would get 1 point, but I knew one of these games was going to end up going to overtime. You know, me being a man of history and stats, I should have known UMD was going to win that. They're they're undefeated in the shootout this year, 4-for-4. Can't get better than perfect. So, you know, if they're going to be on top of anything, at least they can say that they've never lost a shootout in 2020. Well, this season, I shouldn't say 2023 or 2024, but this season they have yet to lose a shootout. So Steve's Mangini with the shootout goals there, Mangini with a goal in regulation with Connor McMenamin as well. It was decent. It was a good effort. I mean, it was low shots. I think it was 26 to 21 or 20 for Colorado College. UMD winning that battle there. Not a ton of offensive opportunities from either squad. The good saves on both sides. I wouldn't say anybody was playing spectacular by any means. I mean, the save percentages speak for themselves there. But yeah, I mean, it was another one of those games where I don't want to say it was largely due to one thing or the other, but UMD just wasn't finding ways to capitalize on their opportunities. They had 2 5-minute majors called against CC that they probably should have gotten more of an opportunity on. They only ended up getting 5 shots total on the night on the power play. But to go along with those 2 5-minute majors, you've got 2 UMD penalties on both of those instances. So they started 4-on-4, ended up getting an extra guy after those expired there. And then, yeah, they weren't able to get anything going. And That's been the story of the second half of the year, is they were riding that hot power play going into the New Year's break, and they just haven't really recovered. I mean, they're still decent on it, but it's nowhere near what they had to start the season. And they came away with 2 points. I want to emphasize that for like the third or fourth time already here. I don't want to harp on it too much against a team that's 11th in the pairwise. If you get 2 points every single night, you're going to be so happy with that. But with the Saturday showing kind of soured that a little bit.
And not to sort of jump into Saturday, Max, but you know, I think as far as UMD struggles have been this year, we've talked about it, right? We've been on this, as painful as it has been, you know, we've been looking for bright spots. We've been looking for things that we can say, hey, you know, yeah, it's not as a rosy as a picture as it has been in recent years. Hey, you got a couple of natty champs here not too long ago, right? Yeah. But at the end of it, it's been a tough road, right? But Colorado College is a team that has come onto the scene this year, being a top team. And as you mentioned, a shootout win against a Tiger team that has been pouring it on here in the second half. Granted, they've been a bit up and down recently here in the second half because they're a team that I think is still kind of growing through some of these learning moments. But as you mentioned, you know, this was sort of the game that UMD needed to play to, I think, have a chance, right? That's to be that Scott Sandlin defensive first team, limit shots. Yeah. It's not going to be, you know, the shall we say, the most entertaining hockey to watch, but it got sort of the job done. You know, is that sort of something that the fan base, in your belief, is, I don't want to say hanging their heads on, but at least has some kind of bright spot in the weekend to look at?
Yeah, I would say that in a perfect world, if everything is being executed the way that Sandlin and this coaching staff wants it to be, those are the games that you're going to get out of it. They've never been a, you know, 6, 7, 8 goals a game type of team, type of program. That's just not how you play hockey for UMD or at UMD. I really don't think there's ever been a time outside of when Brett Hull was there for a couple of years where they were getting anywhere near those kind of numbers. But they're having trouble with their top producers this second half of the stretch, or the past 2 years, really. I mean, you've got Ben Steeves, who is, you know, otherworldly, incredibly talented. We'd be lucky to have him another year, and fingers crossed that that happens. He doesn't have a point in the last 4 games at all. So it's been a rough stretch for him. Owen Gallatin's been kind of producing as one of the more senior guys on the team. Or sorry, Quinn Olson has been producing lately. But Owen Gallatin and Blake Biondi, they haven't put up any points in the last 3 or 4 games either. So your top 3 guys on the season just haven't really been the ones that are putting numbers up at the end of the day, and you're getting guys like your Mangini or your Perkins or some of these other guys, but just not as often as you need to find these extra wins here. So I think back to the original point there, these quote unquote slower games or more physical games, and, you know, more patient, we'll say, that's the way that you're going to have to play if you're UMD, if you want to win, and you just have to be able to capitalize when you've got those opportunities in front of you. But that wasn't what we saw on Saturday. I mean, the first 2 periods really, really weren't that bad. The third period, it kind of fell apart there, especially at the end. And, you know, they had 3 UMD penalties called in the last, I think, minute and a half of play. And it all started off with what, in my opinion, is a terrible call. I think we should have had a second look at it for some embellishment there and just gotten coincidentals at the very least. I think the CC player just kind of dropped to the ice. You saw him kind of drag the UMD player's arms. I don't even remember who it was, but regardless, it was ridiculous in my opinion. You can go, I think I ended up posting the video of it just because I was so flabbergasted with what I was seeing. But
Max, the one thing that I will say is if you were able to review embellishment in college hockey, there would be nobody on the bench. So.
Yeah, that's fair. Hey, good point. And there's a lot of things that look like embellishment. That's just, you know, guys figuring out how to play at a faster pace, especially on the younger scale there. So it would be very, very tough. But sometimes when it's blatantly obvious, it's just something that irks me. And while we're on the topic of things that bother me, I want to go back to a call on Friday. I think it was Mangini. It doesn't really matter who it was because we see it throughout every level of hockey now. Kids, guys, men, whatever level you're playing at, they're starting to turn their back into danger because they know they can't get hit. And if they do get hit, they're going to get a call for it and their team's going to have a power play. The likelihood that they get injured, you know, not super great, but it's significantly higher than if they just took a hit on the shoulder like they normally would. And that's something I think that needs to be changed with how we're refereeing the game. And I posted this on, you know, Twitter, X, whatever social media thing you want to call it now. It sounds counterintuitive to penalize a player that just got checked or hit in the back. However, if they're going to keep turning their back into danger, we need to disincentivize that from being an option for these players. And I don't know how to do that other than giving them a penalty for that. I'm sure somebody that's more creative than me can figure out a way to do that. But that needs to change, in my opinion, with something that's in hockey, because it kind of ruins the flow and is just incredibly frustrating for every team. And I'm not saying that UMD is the only one that's been penalized. I think they benefited from this. They benefit from this in that run 2 years ago in the postseason. They took Michigan Tech's number one player out in the exact same, you know, manner or fashion. I just, it's something that frustrates me to no end with hockey right now. And I'm trying to figure out a creative way to get this out of play at the very least in the NCHC, but at all levels. And I think it's going to be needing to start sooner rather than later. But I don't want to belabor all of the rest of our points here with some more referee talk. I do that enough. And you know, we can
have a show at the end of the season, Max, yeah, where we just talk Sabres if you want. Sure. But I don't disagree with the having to address turning your face to the boards, right? Yeah. I mean, at least I'm older, whatever, right? But I remember as a peewee, you know, the first thing you learn was not to check.
Don't turn towards the board.
But how to take a check, right? Yeah. It wasn't that the technique was how you hit. And yes, there was a lot of talk and emphasis on when you see numbers, you got to back off. But it was more so, again, at least the coaches that I had were very, very strict on, hey, if you're going to get hit, take it in the shoulders. Do not turn your back to the play. That's right. How you get potentially paralyzed. That's how injuries happen, right? So I don't disagree with that. I don't know if you can penalize it, but you do wonder what has to change for the players to essentially not put themselves in vulnerable positions. And since you got me on a tangent, right? I still remember, yeah, was please. It the Matt Martin, Keith Ballard incident with the Wild, yeah, right? He turned into it and people wanted a call. And I don't know if you and I are on the same page, or I would imagine we would, but I'm like, he turned his back at the last second when Matt Martin's committed to the hit. And I don't consider Matt Martin a dirty player by any stretch of the imagination. He plays hard. He plays with an edge, but he plays within the boundaries, right? I think he plays a really clean, hard game. And I appreciate that about him. But you can't also fault the player there, to your point, where if I'm going to turn my back at the last second, for whatever reason that is, right? I'm not sure. A lot of it's instinctual. I think, Max, I think we forget too that hockey's for a very fast game.
Yep.
But I agreed with the non-call there because, again, at the end of the day, you cannot put yourself in that spot that close to having contact happen and expect that they're, you know, it's going to go your way all the time. And again, the caveat that you present is it's college hockey. They almost have to call it, right? Because again, you're going to de-incentivize. And I even think the NHL, more than anything, the onus is on the player delivering the hit more than it is on the player receiving the hit. Again, I'm not sure what the solution is, nor do I know what the solution is, Max, to the UMD struggles, even strength, right? Because again, how about that segue, right?
Yeah, that was a good one. I was waiting to see how you were going to do it.
Yeah. Saturday, they take a 4-1 loss. And again, yeah. Ben Steves, a little point. I think we talked about this too, Max. And then I swear I'm going to get off the vocals here and becoming Noah Grant 2.0. That's not good.
No, please. I like the back and forth more than you just talking. I'm not one of the guys that likes his own voice. I'm just
no, I'm not either.
A little bit of commentary.
But at the end of it, you know, that was a concern for us back even weeks ago was what if Ben Steves dries up, or more so, I think what we thought we might see is player, you know, he would be a marked man in the sense of if we can slow him down, we pretty much got UMD by, you know, by the hand. And that's, I think it's a little bit of both, right? I think there has been some struggle.
Oh, that's what happened. Yep.
But I think other teams also are like, if we can silence him, we got a good chance here.
Yep. Yeah. They're not letting him fade down on that power play into the circle on that right side, left, depending on if you're a goalie perspective or not there. They're not letting him go in there and get those one timers from the point anymore. They're not even letting him start at the point and switch. They've figured out how to basically maybe not eliminate him, but force him to take lower percentage shots on that power play. And it's, you know, through traffic from as far on the blue line as you can get away from the goaltender. And it's tough to see your number one weapon kind of get isolated like that. So there's probably some more creative strategies, plays, ways that the coaching staff is going to try and figure out to get him open. Maybe he's switching sides, which would kind of eliminate that one timer that's been so effective. But they've got to do something to figure out a way to get him some more opportunities there, because as far as shot percentages go on the year, I mean, it's Ben Steves and it's everybody else on UMD. And I'm not saying nobody else can do it, but it goes a really long way for the team to see, you know, your number one guy continue to produce. And that goes a long way for keeping him around if he's finding ways to score and be happy at UMD. So one way to do that is something, you know, I and other people now have been harping on for quite a long time, and that's that face-off battle. They lost both games again, getting shellacked. They're the worst team in the league outside of Stonehill, which has an asterisk by it anyway, by far. Like, I think the, you know, the 62nd team up is like a full percentage point, if not a percentage and a half above UMD. And that's crazy. And we've harped on, you know, centers and everybody else getting switched out, this, that, and the other thing. Like, you have to luck into 50%, you know, some game eventually here. But they just haven't been able to do that. And so I went in and I took a look at, you know, the top 20 teams, or the ranked teams, we'll say, in college hockey right now. And there's only three of them that have a faceoff percentage under 50%. That's Michigan State at 49, we'll call it, BC at 49.5, and Minnesota at 49.8. And those are all very close to 50%. And you know what the difference is between UMD and the style they play and those teams? Scoring. In order, you've got Michigan State with 133, BC with 143, and Minnesota with 120 goals. UMD has 91 this year, so they are leagues below them in terms of making up for that talent and in the way that the games play out. And it has something to do with the conference you play in, and I understand that, but that just, you know, emphasizes my point even more. I think with the NCHC, puck possession is key. It's king. You see, you know, North Dakota and Denver, when they're on, just being able to control it in the offensive zone is paramount to their success and the things that they've been able to do. And, you know, capitalizing on fast breaks is all good and well. And, you know, you need to be able to do that too. But if you're holding the puck, it's really hard for the other team to score. And that's kind of something that UMD has been lacking this year.
Yeah. And I would love to know the breakdown, Max. Maybe this is for next video. Of the 90 or so goals that you've scored, how many of those have been on the power play? I bet those even strength numbers. Oh, not fantastic. Right. No. But we digress. St. Cloud didn't have a great weekend either. Yeah, and Max, it's not that I think the Honest Husky fans had a
I think it's just confidence. Denver. Yeah.
You know, against Denver, Denver is a good team, right? They're tied for third, technically fourth in the pairwise. But it's more of like, okay, if it's 2-1, 3-2, it's like, yeah, you lost, but you at least feel like you were in the game, you're competitive. No, both of those games were out of hand. And why I bring this up is, guess who's facing each other for the regular season finale, and more so for St. Cloud. And we're going to talk about the pairwise implications for this weekend. This is a big matchup for the St. Cloud State. Huge matchup. So let's do this. Let's quickly preview this battle of the dogs, which, you know, I think a lot of people looked at this maybe in January with the way things were trending and said, this will probably be a throwaway series. It's anything but right now for really either squad.
For one of them.
Yeah.
No, for one of them. I'll be the first to say it. Yeah, I think it matters a lot more for St. Cloud than it does for UMD. Obviously, UMD wants to have a good showing, not only, you know, Scott Sandlin to kind of stick it to his former co-bench boss at UMD that's now at St. Cloud there, but for just getting on the right foot going into the NCHC playoffs there. So just getting a little bit of momentum. They haven't won a game in eight games. They've got a tie and a shootout win, but that's still technically not a win. So, you know, that's the second time they've done that this year too, but we're going to get back to the series at hand and not like in the past there. I think that it matters more for St. Cloud just because they're on that pairwise bubble, and we'll get into that too. But it's just one of those things where it's UMD and St. Cloud. They played once earlier this year, and it was a one goal game in both games, and they were two wildly close. Different games. Yeah, in terms of a low scoring physical battle to a high scoring, maybe not a shootout, but it was, I think, 6-5 ended up winning St. Cloud.
6-5, yeah, multiple lead changes. UMD at one point, I think, had the lead in the third, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, one of the games where they gave up the lead in the third. Yeah, that sounds about right. but
I feel like this is not a therapy session, but this is becoming to like trigger Max of each session today.
It's easier than you think it is, especially at this point in the year. But, you know, it's the third weekend in a row where UMD is playing a currently seeded playoff team after they were just swept. And it's like every time that they come in here, this opponent needs these wins for one reason or another. And it's in terms of St. Cloud right now, it's to keep their NCAA postseason playoffs alive. And UMD leads them in a couple of categories, power play and penalty kill. So their special teams statistically are better than St. Cloud. That hasn't mattered the last three weekends. They've been better than the last three teams that they played, technically. And it just has not mattered in terms of the outcomes of these games. Yeah, they got a couple of points out of Colorado College on Friday night, but in terms of like dominating a game, like they're ahead in these statistics, that just hasn't happened. So they're really going to have to lean on the physicality and blocking shots, and that's easier said than done when you're going up against, you know, I think the top three scorers for St. Cloud, and you'd be better to talk about this than I would at this point. But I think they're two graduates and a senior, right? It's Anhorn. Yep.
And
Kupka, yes. So it's one of those things where you've got some really experienced guys and very talented guys on the other side that you kind of have to isolate. And that's going to be really tough for UMD. I think it's three guys that we knew we were going to have to be worried about coming into the year. And it's those same three guys on the back end. And I think the difference between this year and last year for St. Cloud is the goaltending. I think there's just been a little bit less production. You don't have people that are up for the Mike Richter Award or in the conversation for being snubbed from it or whatever.
We don't have Dryden McKay. We know that.
Well, yeah. they're just, you know, they're, it's not bad goaltending either. It's just, it's average. It's, you know, middle of the road, and it's not winning you games like it normally would. And
it's not Ryan Fanti or Hunter Shepard-esque.
It's not even Bassey from last year.
But you have a point, Max, with the goaltending with St. Cloud, because it was Bassey was the go-to guy for a while. Yep. And then he started to struggle. And I know Brett Larson wouldn't, shall we say, verbalize it, but then with the lineups, right, you could sense that Isaac Posh was getting more of a look. Again, he got both starts against Western Michigan, and even this past weekend, it was getting shelled. They went right back to him. Now, granted, he's still a freshman, right? So I think part of that was, okay, bad Friday. You got to be able to put that back, you know, put it in the back of your head. You got to erase it. You got to come up with this fresh. Wasn't the result. Again, it's a good team in Denver. Let's not forget that, right? So I think there's some growing pains there too.
I think Rizzo gone this weekend again, or last week
was again? Yes. So, and that's the other part for St. Cloud, right? Is that they were without both Massimo Rizzo and their other, basically the top two centers. I forget the other player's name, and that's bad, but I did, unfortunately. But that is where it's like, okay, for St. Cloud, and really for this weekend to kind of summarize, I want them to play playoff hockey. I don't want them to play desperate hockey, right? There is a difference there, right? Because desperate hockey, there's more emotions. You're not playing probably intelligent hockey, you know,
you're a little too tight. You're just not having the same flow. It's those things where you get, you know, a soft pass. It goes off the heel of your stick because you're too worried about where it's going next instead of just corralling it. Yeah. You don't want to see that.
No. And let me ask you this, Max, because and you had in your notes, the pairwise, essentially the cut line, and St. Cloud is at the cut line. I don't disagree with that, nor do I think any Huskies fans would disagree with that. We both know the coaching staff probably knows this. I believe these are two must win games for St. Cloud, and they probably need to happen in regulation. And it's not that they're going to jump up from this, right? It would have to take somebody else having a bad weekend up top of them to get them out of that, but more just trying to stand pat, right? This is more about St. Cloud standing pat. And I think that for the Huskies to continue to have a shot at the NCAA tournament as an at-large bid, right? They need to at least get to St. Paul to be able to, I think, make that dream happen. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. They're sitting at 14 right now, and I think that that's right below the cut line, if we're being really honest, because, you know, your 16 is going to go to 15 and 16. I'm not going to say which one's which, because it all depends on who wins the tournament. CCHA and the Atlantic Hockey. Those two are out the door already. So it's one extra seed that would go to either an NCHC, you know, champion, a Hockey East champion, or an ECAC champion that's not already above that cut line. And right now, just reading the next teams that are at or below that 14, you've got St. Cloud, Western Michigan, Cornell, Omaha, and then, you know, New Hampshire, Arizona State. Those would be surprises. Arizona State can't even win their tournament because they don't have one. And then Northeastern. So I think, you know, they've got St. Cloud, Western, Cornell, Omaha, and Northeastern. You've got five teams in there that could easily win their conference tournaments and sneak into that spot. And if you get two, then you have to be above 13. So I don't see how anybody is putting the cut line below 14 at this point right now. There's just too much parity. And, you know, we've seen all of these teams beat the number one teams in their own conference there. So I think it's going to be pretty paramount to be at 12 or above at the end of the season if you want to be an at-large bid. So, or we'll just say comfortable for an at-large bid versus what it's been in previous seasons. And that's either unfortunate or fortunate, depending on which conference you're in, right, and how exciting you want it to be. But yeah, I mean, they've got to make it to St. Paul, just given their schedule. I think if they are able to sweep UMD, maybe they get up to 12. But if you don't make it to St. Paul, you're losing two games at the end of the season. You probably drop below that point anyway. So a split here doesn't kill them. I think if you split and get a good, you know, matchup and make it to St. Paul, you're not going to be playing Miami. That's locked in for North Dakota already.
Correct. Yep.
So you're going to be playing at worst UMD, and at worst in terms of ability to climb. And at best, maybe like another Western Michigan or one of those same teams that we were just mentioning there. So if you get two good wins against them, it's a much easier climb up than it is for some of these other teams that might be, you know, at or around that bubble. And all you're doing is fighting with one another for that last seed anyway. So, I would say if you get two wins here, speaking for St. Cloud, you're in a pretty good spot. And if you split, then it's just, all right, now our backs are against the wall and we need to make it to St. Paul. And maybe, depending on how far you drop, need to make it to that championship game. So we'll see how it shakes out. But there's a lot of competition still in the NCHC. And that's not to say that two of those teams can't make it, because Michigan, we've seen them fall apart. They almost gave the game away to Minnesota, and they're sitting at 13 right now. UMass has two pretty big wins. If they got one of those dropped, they're probably sitting at 13 or 14 right now. So it can flip in a weekend pretty easy, and we've got a weekend of regular season left in NCHC, and I think most of Hockey East.
Yes.
And then, you know, playoffs in both of those leagues as well. So yeah, there's quite a bit that can happen right at that bubble line, and it's basically between those two conferences plus Michigan.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? This is what meaningful hockey looks like, and again, it's begs the question, and definitely a conversation for the postseason. 16 teams or more, we don't know. Here's what we do know, Max, is that let's again kind of unpack the NCHC as a whole. As you mentioned, North Dakota did secure officially the Penrose, the regular season NCHC championship last weekend. They sit on top at 49 points. Denver,
greatest regular season team in NCHC history.
can you tell folks who maybe are outside Minnesota how happy we sound? Yeah, not at all. That banner is going to go up, I'm pretty sure, also, by the way. Those wonderful, meaningful banners. Anyway, but Denver, with their 6 points, does leapfrog St. Cloud State into that second seed position. St. Cloud dropping to third. Colorado College just 2 points behind at number four at 38. Omaha, 4 points back with them. They're now the top away seed at number five at 34. Western Michigan, who slid ever so slowly but surely down since the first half of the season, now in sixth at 31 points, Duluth 23, Miami at seven. Max, I'm going to finish this segment with this one question, because Noah Grant, to me, I love him to death. He still seems to think that Miami can push the quarterfinals to a third game, or at least make it interesting. I think Miami, wins and losses aside, is actually playing better hockey. I do think that. However, North Dakota, I can't see it. I just
at
can't.
Home,
What's your thoughts on Miami giving North Dakota a scare in the quarterfinals?
Yeah, I mean, we saw Miami, you know, keep it close against Omaha. Not that Omaha is North Dakota. Not that, you know, that's the same atmosphere as the Ralph either. But it was one goal games again against North Dakota. We saw them come up with some decent wins against some other NCHC teams. They played good at the beginning of the year, like you mentioned. I think they are playing, you know, decent hockey right now. I just don't see it going to three games. I think North Dakota comes away with probably a shellacking in one of them, and then, you know, maybe they keep it close at the end and give up an empty net goal, you know, in the last 2, 3, 4 minutes there. But that's just playoff atmosphere at the Ralph. North Dakota wants that one seed. They don't want to be forced to travel if they don't have to. And if they have the one seed, there's no way that they're not leaving the Midwest. There's no way that they are leaving the Midwest. And that's another home game for them, or another couple of home games for them if they make it there. So they've got a lot of incentive to continue winning, both this weekend versus Omaha, as well as in that first round of the playoffs against Miami. So I don't see Brad Berry giving the guys a break. I think it's pedal to the floor as for the rest of the stretch here. It's over in two games, if you ask me.
I'm with you. And again, no disrespect to Miami, but North Dakota right. is just on a different level this year. And I just don't think they're going to overlook Miami, which, if I remember correctly, did sort of scare them earlier in the season in Oxford. Yeah. And I also think that, as you mentioned, Brad Berry, when it comes to playoff hockey, this team usually steps up another notch. And I don't expect anything less from a team that somehow remade its entire defensive core, got a transfer goalie in
1 year.
This team is, look at this, right? They're a good hockey team. That's all we can say. And they're going to be tough to beat no matter what. So with that being said, Max, again, thank you so much for joining me this week as we get closer and closer to playoff hockey. And speaking of playoff hockey, holy cow, was the CCHA, just in a different league this year. And what a finish it was. That's up next here on MNCAA.